You Can Hack It, Special Episode 1, Warhammer 40,000 and Miniature Wargaming.
1, 2, 3, Android, are you ready? Come on.
No, you are listening to You Can Hack It, an RPG podcast about how you can hack it, both as a player and GM, and also how to add, replace, or modify rules. I'm John.
And I'm Kyle. Each show will be starting off with a discussion about a hack which you've created, witnessed, or been involved in some way.
So now, Kyle, should we get to the hack?
On to the hack.
Warning, You Can Hack It has a lot of profanity.
Here we are.
Here we are, and it's good to be back. It's good to be finally recording again in the new year. Things have been difficult to get together and actually record our stuff. I'm glad that we're finally here. We're finally doing it. It's good to do something, especially something a little off the wall, a little bit off kilter from what we normally do.
Yeah, we haven't done anything special yet, really. Well, no, every time we record it's special.
It's a special moment between the two of us.
Yeah.
Staring at your eyes.
But today is a special moment for everybody else.
Exactly. Today is a special moment where we go a little off the grid and discuss a little bit about some miniature wargaming, our other hobby that we like to do.
Yeah, but we're not quite into there yet. So how'd your Christmas go, John?
Christmas was great. I did a lot of family stuff. It was really nice to have a chance to see everybody. All in all, great, fun, wonderful. Really, really good. Yourself?
I drove 3.5 hours through a snowstorm Christmas Eve.
Oh, my God.
I got to a relative's place, I guess my new family, my wife's family, about like, well, midnight, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And honestly, it was pretty good.
Right.
And then the rest of the Christmas was fun. Got to hang out with lots of people I enjoy. Relatives are good, oddly enough.
Right on. I'm very sorry I didn't make it to the New Year's festival. I woke up a couple of days before New Year's with an incredible, like, neck agony. Like, I had a spasm. I couldn't move my neck left or right. It made driving kind of difficult. And as a result, I mostly spent my New Year's looking straight ahead and wishing for death because it was agony. Agony. I should have gone to the doctor. I didn't. And, I mean, we have free medical care, so what the hell was I doing? But I just didn't want to go.
You didn't go at all?
I didn't go at all. So stupid, right?
I'll show you some neck exercises afterwards, John.
Excellent. Is it like, oh. earning that mature rating. The what I ended up doing was I ended up putting a whole bunch of, like, 8535 and eating Robaxacet, like, Tic Tacs. And it seemed to work.
You relaxed the muscles enough, yeah?
Yeah, muscle relaxant. I had a little bit of booze to it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't actually have booze to it, because I didn't really have
idea. Yeah, you might have been dead right now.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, my life is a lot better after the rigor mortis wears off. P.S. Why am I talking? I'm dead. So that was my New Year's. Moving into the January-February time, tell me about gaming, sir. How's gaming been the last couple months?
Pretty good. We not as much as I expected I'd get done in January. I sort of, you know, had high hopes, and there was kind of fall through of everything. I would say everything but Warhammer. Warhammer has sustained me through January, to be honest.
It's been amazing how the initiative that Jeff, our good friend Jeff from one of the older episodes, I believe it was the one about teaching people to game.
Yes.
That really pulled through, did a very good job of organizing all the disparate groups who are playing and saying, listen, let's get together, let's get this going on. And he's being the commissioner, the commish. And it's been great. So I'm really excited. I've been really into the painting, doing a lot of that, a lot of lonely painting. I really want to try and do more group stuff, and I don't know why I don't just call you up and say, hey, man, what are you doing? Want to come over and paint? Because you're a block and a half away.
I should call you up more, John. I just don't know your schedule, but I know Jeff's schedule, so I tend to call him more, because I know when he's around and when he's not.
Yeah, my schedule has been a little weird. My car had some issues, unfortunately, and that finally got fixed, which is good, so I'm mobile again. Winnipeg is very much a car city, because I'm afraid of biking. And I know you bike because for some reason you have this death wish.
Wintertime, I could bike in wintertime. I don't. I generally walk or bus in wintertime. Though, I take the bus, I think it is, like, once a week at most, and I can walk everywhere else. And within half an hour, I can walk everywhere else I need to go.
It is nice to be in the downtown where most of the area is located. I had a really bizarre moment last night. I've been, as I mentioned in the last time we got together, I've been involved in the vampire LARP.
Oh, yeah.
Live action role playing. I've snubbed it for a great deal of years because it's involved in another LARP. And I've kind of revised my thoughts about this. There are some terrible vampire players. They're not all terrible vampire players.
Just like there's some terrible werewolf players.
Exactly, in the other LARP. I had a weird moment because for the third time, I've been in court, so I've been in the game, going to the actual event games four times. Three of the four times, and this is going to sound like wankery, it's going to sound like me jerking off in front of you, but I've been nominated for player of the game. And I've won twice. The third time, I was given the GM's pick, which is the GM gets to pick someone as their personal favorite, last night. So I've been in the game four times. I've been nominated three times. Twice I've won. Once the GM has given me the nod, and there's some experience point award. Sometimes they give terrible movies out. It's hilarious. Someone turned to me and they said, you know, I've been in this game a long time, and I haven't had as much fun as when I'm interacting with you. I guess I should feel good about that. But my response was an enduring sense of pity, because that guy had been playing in this vampire game for 8 years. And I've been here two and a half months, and that was the best he's ever done. I'm like, what's going on? What I'm noticing, which is really depressing, is that for the most part in that game, people don't talk to each other. They sit in a corner and they're all cool and lonely and loner-like, and they're all staring at each other and posing. And the reason I get player of the game almost every single time I've been there is because I go around and I talk to people. I interact. Trying to say, listen, guys, if you just interact, this game's a lot more fun. But they're like, no, you're an amazing role player. I'm like, I'm not really an amazing role player. I'm just putting in some effort. Go talk to people. Interact. If it's not what your character would do, then make it something your character could do.
And that's the thing. I agree with that point right there, is that people design... Sometimes you have to revise characters you create because they're not playable or they're not fun to play. And that is okay to do. You can just say, okay, this character isn't really very fun to play. Exactly. Yes, I might have 500 uber powers of strength, but does that make it fun to play? No. Okay, then, change it. Who cares if he doesn't have uber strength? Maybe he's just a fun character to play. That's all really what we're seeking out, I think, in a lot of these role-playing games.
And with LARPs especially, LARPs are social. So if you come in playing a deafmute, you're setting yourself up for a really boring evening, and you have no one to blame but yourself. If you're playing a person that is an introvert and doesn't like talking to people, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why would you sabotage your character from the get-go? It's not a challenge to roleplay. That's bullshit. It's boring.
It's coming in, creating conflicts for yourself. Like, and with the characters who have conflict. If there's no conflict, they're not interesting.
Exactly. And I think the best way to create those conflicts is create conflicts with others, because then you involve other people, and then people are appreciative of being involved because they're sitting there bored out of their ass. Because the game is going nowhere until the monster, the 10 p.m. monster, rolls around. And last night, there was going to be a new prince. And everyone, there's Praxis, which is what happens when a new prince happens. It's like an election, but more violent. And I was prepared for horrible bloodshed and back dealings and stabbings. I get there, it's already been decided. What could have been an amazing moment of role-playing and interactions and backstabbings and double dealings didn't happen because everybody was so concerned about protecting their character that they forgot that that could have been super awesome to play out the drama. They go into the closed doors, they make the backroom deals, they come out and say, this is what's happening. And I was like, that's too bad. You just wasted a golden opportunity to make an awesome role-playing moment. And I just don't get it sometimes.
And I think you used a word here. You say they forgot. I don't know if they knew it existed, that opportunity.
I just think that sometimes people get so myopic with their character sheet that they don't look around them and realize that the sheet is worthless if you don't do something with it and if you don't interact with other people. Again, it's a social medium. If you're playing your own single-player game, it's kind of like masturbating in a room full of people masturbating.
It's like, how is the
Isn't group sex better? The analogy breaks down. The metaphor is kind of falling apart at this point.
It breaks down a lot. Let's take a team sport. Let's take, I don't know, hockey. Try to play hockey by yourself.
Yeah, it's really terrible. Like, you're like, I scored a goal! Go me! But if you're playing hockey with someone else or a group of someone else's, you're playing as a team, you're interacting, even the opposing team, you're interacting with them, and, I mean, that is where the interplay comes into fore. But if you're just sitting in a corner going, look at my character sheet and all the dots on it, I'm so amazing. It doesn't happen for everybody. It's not the whole game. There's just enough people that are doing that to reinforce everyone else to do that.
Yes.
And when I buck against that trend by coming in, everyone's like, that's amazing. Why you're doing this amazing thing. I'm like, I'm not doing, this is not amazing. What I'm doing is easy. Just turn to your fellow player and say, what's up? And they don't. So that's my thought of the day. Of my little thing. So how about you, sir? Have you had a profound moment?
I definitely had a profound moment, though I had it before. It was, I'm playing this D&D game. I started into it, and I had some reservations about playing it because I knew kind of what to expect from D&D 4th Ed, and I knew kind of what would happen, and it happened exactly what I thought would happen, and I was slightly bored. And I knew that would kind of happen, but everybody recognized that, and everybody recognized the problems inherent in it, and the GM is trying to design ways to make it more interesting, trying to insert possibly goals or beliefs onto characters. He wants more input into the next scenario to make it more involved, try to get more character role-playing. And I was commented on as having the most, trying to role-play the most, basically, with my character, because I understood that this is what's required to make it fun. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not going to be interesting. And because most people kind of just die down and just kind of roll some dice and that was it. You know?
Yeah, the d20, the d8. I roll, I do 10 damage. I hit him and do 10 damage. And that is so awful.
Yeah. And as I mentioned this, the person who's running the game, I said, and he recognized this as a problem. He understood that. He wants to try and make it more fun. And I said to him, well, this is why I already have my fix for wargaming. 40K. That's what I got my fix for. I found an interesting wargaming experience for myself where 4th Ed has kind of lost any sort of flavor. I mean, it had this appeal of newness that it had to begin with. And now it's kind of blasé.
Yeah. And yeah, the new car smell is gone from 4th Ed.
It's true. And I told him when I first started playing, and he wasn't really a fan about it, but a little bit, I said, I'd rather be playing other games. If you were playing, like, Mouse Guard or, like, Hot War, which I want to play, or other games other than 4th Ed, I'd be more interested because there's role-playing elements designed into the system, which people are like, well, you can role-play on top of that. It's true, but it's... Unless it's not built, if it's not built in, people have to make the effort to try and include it. And if they don't make the effort, it falls apart.
And the systems of other games are interesting. I just don't think that there is I don't think a blanket system is very interesting. I would like to see more ideas of how to incorporate certain things. And I think that playing more games makes us better role players.
Yes.
I think that's true. And I think that if you believe that's wrong, then you're dumbass. Should be punched in the face with the rake.
Punched in the face with the rake.
In addition...
Like a rake fist?
A rake fist. A power rake fist. Lightning claw. I don't know what the hell they're called.
Lightning rakes?
Lightning rake fists.
Lightning rake fists. Yeah, lightning slashing. Power rake fists.
Slashing! It's why I opted out of a couple of 4th Ed games. I was just like, look, I'm involved in 3. 3 is good.
Yeah.
They're irregularly paced. I mean, there's one every month. There's one every 2 weeks, and there's one every 3 weeks. So to be honest, I play D&D maybe 5 times a month.
Which is plenty.
I want to do other things. You know, I'm getting my fix of that, and it's okay. But you're right. Sometimes when you're playing D&D, you're like, there's this schizophrenic moment where you're thinking, am I playing a war game, or am I playing a role-playing game? Mm-hmm. I think that's something we'll talk about after the
break. Let's start talking about...
Let's do it! Let's get on to...
Wait, is it actually Hack?
As a special episode? Let's get on to this special episode, Hack.
The Podcast. We kick boredom square in the nuts.
Podcast.com.
So the year is 40,000. And shit's not so great. How not so great is it, Kyle?
The dark, grim future dark.
The dark, grim future dark? The double hell from Penny Arcade?
The Emperor sacrificed 1,000 psychics a day, and he is on the good side.
That's right. The bad guys do worse things, like destroy reality and pull out demons and kick puppies. And
kick puppies is the worst one, John.
The kick puppies guys are the worst. And then there's the locusts that eat everything and the horrible... torturer elf guys that are all to S&M and wear bondage gear.
So I only half pay attention to the fluff often when I'm thinking about 40K. I kind of, you know, I understand there's all this extra stuff. And when you really look at these codex, these things are called codexes, one for each race. And they kind of have a little fluff about each one. And you look at it and you go, well, that's kind of interesting. And some of you go, well, let's pretend that they didn't say that. Let's pretend that doesn't exist. And let's just kind of play with the fluff I want to play with.
It's almost like a metal, like a heavy metal album from the 70s and 80s. A lot of the time, when I'm reading Warhammer, I'm thinking of like Slayer or Megadeth or Sepultura on the radio playing all this angry hate metal. There's a certain, it gets kind of silly when I read it. I'm like, really, really, the Space Marines, you know, have gene seeds and they reproduce and they're all filled with, it's just ridiculousness upon ridiculousness. It's hokey and I like to think of it as just kind of being fun.
Yes, I was just going to say, that's the thing. I find appeal, I don't really take Warhammer that serious, like going grim, dark. I'm like, it's kind of fun because it's almost comic, I think, in lots of ways. The way it's presented and the way, like the orcs, they believe their trucks go faster. They paint it red, and because it's red, it'll go faster. And so, in the rules, it goes faster.
They originated the chainsaw sword.
Yes,
they're the originator of it. And back in the early 80s when it first came out, they said, you know what would be great? A chainsaw sword. Let's use that. And they have a chainsaw sword. All these other more recent games have chainsaw swords at the end of their guns in some cases. As we take a look at this, at the fluff behind Warhammer 40,000, and all the books that come with it, these codexes, we have the main book, the currently at 5th edition. It's a big, yeah, ridiculous tome.
And here we're talking about the miniature wargaming specifically, the books that go along with it currently.
Exactly. The Dark Heresy and Rogue Trader, I really don't have any experience with. And I
White Dwarf is what the magazine is printed that has Warhammer 40K in it.
Yeah, where it all started. My thought about this, about the minis wargame, it's been around for a long time. It has been
oh, yeah.
It celebrated its 25th year anniversary a couple of years ago. So yeah, it's got to be close to 30 years it's been around.
For Warhammer 40K, that's right. And Fantasy's been around longer than that, I believe.
Wow.
Fantasy version. And this is not to say wargaming of miniature style has not been around for longer. It's been around a lot longer than that. Of course, because D&D originated as, came out of wargaming, came out of like miniature wargaming.
Time-honored thing. I mean, Napoleon played a lot of this stuff too on miniatures. That's where the Napoleonic wargame came from. It makes a lot of sense. But this particular Games Workshop created a hobby that we have engaged ourselves in. How long have you been in it, Kyle?
Well, I probably started around 7 years ago or so into it. I played it for a few years. I never really fully engaged in it. Like, I never read the books. I read some of the codexes. I painted some miniatures. It was really good for me at that time to get into paint miniatures. I sucked at it, but it was good. And I played some games, which I enjoyed somewhat, but again, I didn't fully engage in it. I hadn't been willing to spend the money to make myself create an army that was tactically viable, so my gameplay experience was only okay at best, because I never felt like I was on a playing level that I could actually feel competitive with, that I could enjoy playing.
And that is one of the three things that you have to do when you're putting together the hobby, the building part, creating the army itself. One of the things that is kind of a matter of discussion is the price. Mm-hmm. When you are younger, I have no idea how the hell you get into this hobby.
Your parents help you pay for it.
I guess it becomes birthday and Christmas presents.
Absolutely.
Or like, you know, rewards for doing the laundry.
Some kids, what have you. You know, they go to sports, for example, like hockey, soccer. Those things are expensive. That's true. If the kids don't do those, they don't go into sports, don't go into music. Music's ridiculously expensive.
I guess every lesson. Yeah, I remember my guitar lessons were like $20 a pop.
Yeah,
so like, and I went there twice a week, so yeah, I could
imagine that. $40 a week on Warhammer, you could have a crazy army in a couple months. Like, you could be well off. Yeah.
That makes sense in my mind. And I mean, when you look at the cost, too, the upfront cost is quite expensive, but one of the things you really want to do with a game like Warhammer and Warhammer 40K is to purchase the larger sets, because you're saving a lot of money. I was looking at, for example, I was examining, for 40,000, for example, I was examining, talking to a friend of mine, looking at one of the battalion or the battle force boxes, and yeah, they have like 50 miniatures-ish inside of them. And it's $108. So you're paying, yep, $2 a miniature. That's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
The average cost of a miniature for Dungeons and Dragons, just looking at the cheap plastic ones, it's $22 and you get 5. So it's cheaper than that. But they're not painted, you have to assemble them. And that part of creating and assembling an army, it really comes down to looking at what you want to make and what you want to create. One of the things I've sort of looked at when buying it is, you're better off to wait a couple of months if you want to get into the hobby. My advice is you should always go to a gaming store that's a Game Workshop store, if you have one, or a hobby store, and ask the guy that's there to run you through a couple of games. That's what I did, because I was like, what's this all about? How does this work? Let's run through a couple of games. And I think that's the way to go.
When did you get into 40K, John?
To go really far back, I played the computer game Space Hulk years ago. Years ago, I played it. I loved that game. It was amazing. It was tactical. But again, it was the computer game, not the board game. I love Space Hulk, but I never made the connection between Space Hulk and 40K. I just didn't, for some reason, that didn't correspond. And so I was pretty derisive and dismissive of 40K and fantasy for the longest time. I thought it was a waste of money. I thought it was kind of a dumb war game. Until I had a moment to talk to, it was either you or Jeff about it. I can't remember who it was.
It's probably Jeff.
Jeff said something about it that really kind of hit a chord with me, about the artistry of painting, about the feeling that you've created something. And he said that the fighting is fun, but you can sort of pick and choose your level of involvement. Are you a painter and a player? Are you a player and a painter? Everyone's sort of a mix of the two, and again, it's like a percentage, right? You're either a 60-40 or an 80-20 or whatever it is.
And that's the thing. It breaks down. You choose an army that you're interested in. Exactly. There's orcs, space orcs is sometimes referred to as. There's like these space marines, power armor. There's, you know, these Eldar, which are kind of like elven almost, like, creatures. Just give you a couple to play with as an idea. So you choose an army. You're going to build an army, and there's different tactics, because you don't have a set army. You'd always choose the guys you want in your army based off of a set format. You'd have a couple troop choices, and you have a couple options. You have a couple elite choices. You can have a couple options. So you kind of choose tactically how you want to build your army. Then there's putting it together. There's painting it. There's playing the game.
The thing that I found when I finally sat down and said, okay, I'm going to try this out, is I went to Games Workshop. I said to the guy, I would like to learn how to play this, and oh my god, are those the guys from Space Hulk? And when I made that connection between my childhood love of Space Hulk and the Space Marines I saw sitting on the board, I was like, oh my god, I've loved Warhammer 40K all these years, and I didn't even know it, because I didn't make the connection. And, I mean, a lot of that is connecting with a nostalgia sense of youth, but also it's just the love of painting and the love of interacting with my friends in a totally different context, in a more competitive context. Because the longest time, I haven't done a lot of that. Mm. A lot of my time has been spent playing cooperative role-playing games. And sometimes, it's nice to kind of compete, to match wits a little bit. And I mean, I do that in board games, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really like the tactical appeal, the outmaneuvering, outwitting. There's a really good appeal to that, and I think that's what itch that scratches, and it's been a really good scratch, I'll tell you.
Now,
a little creepy.
I was saying before that I played about 7 years ago, and then I played for a couple of years, just off and on, and I kind of dropped out for a few years. And Jeff, our friend, he got back into it, because he was really interested in the painting, and this time around, we really got into painting, we got down and figured out kind of what I believe our skills have significantly improved, even once he got back into it after doing some research. And also, I know for myself, I'm mentioning competitiveness, and there's a number of elements of competitiveness that really is interesting, that makes it more fun. One of the things I'm just going to branch in briefly is terrain. Now, when I was back in the day, I remember playing, and we would just use kind of whatever. We eventually kind of got some pieces
like
of
Pringles
terrain.
Cans and, like, water bottles and
but
Lego.
Once you have actual pieces to play with, it's much more dynamic and interesting, because you can see your guys running up the hill, or hiding in that building, or running through the trees. And it's much more engaging all of a sudden.
I haven't had a chance to put together much terrain, but I really want to. In fact, one of the biggest issues, of course, and this is a big consideration when you're doing things like terrain, space. Where do you put these chunks of terrain when you're done with them? And if you don't have the necessary space, there's not much you can do about that. It becomes very challenging, very difficult. One of the reasons I haven't gone into doing a lot of terrain building is because there simply isn't enough space in the place where I live. The apartment simply doesn't have that kind of space considerations.
I'm hoping actually to build a bit of extra shelf right there and put more terrain pieces up there if I can.
That place looks great in the west mezzanine of your enormous palace.
My palace
located in the clouds on Saturn, because pointing isn't really good radio.
Well, I figured you'd fill in the blanks there,
John. Yeah, no, I did. See, Rings of Saturn. On the Cloud City Best Bid, Orlando. That makes me Chewbacca.
So.
In my fantasy. Cold 45. Let's move on.
Just to give people a basic breakdown, if you're not familiar with 40K, and just talking about wargaming, we're talking about miniatures. You play in a 6x4 surface, and...
6x4 what?
It's
cubits?
6x4, kilometers, I think. It's 6 feet by 4 feet board, generally what you play on.
You know what I think is really hilarious about that? 6 foot by 4 feet are imperial measurements. Hasn't Britain moved on to metric?
Yes, but they still, as in Canada, still hold on to some of the old system.
So what's 6 feet by 4 feet in metric? Well, I don't know. Let's see, 2.5 inches to a, 2.5 inches to a centimeter, 12 inches
so
to a
foot. So while John's doing that,
carrying 6 kilometers by 4 kilometers. Right. That's probably what it is. I don't know. But yeah, 6 feet by 4 feet. So what is that? What's the average size of that? What does that look like? Is that as big as a bread box? For people who are measurably challenged like myself, what's a 6 by 4 area?
I think it was 6 foot person. Most people are around between 5.5 feet to 6 feet. So imagine that laying down. And that's how long the table is, right?
And then with your arms out.
And with your arms out, basically. Your arm span should be actually... Your arm span should be close to... How does it work? Not your height,
half,
but...
Half, isn't it half your height?
Maybe. It's close to that. That's not bad, actually. Your arms
out. That's the average size of the table that you're supposed to play on. That's essentially a dinner table, usually. Like a 6-person dinner table, I think, is about.
Yes, about a 6-person dinner table. Like the average 4-person dinner table is a little too small, but you. Yeah. So, as in role-playing games, you use dice. In this game, you use D6s exclusively, 6-sided dice to roll for everything.
Which the rest of the world calls dice. I mean, we're the only ones that say D6s. It's really awesome if you ever hear someone say D6. That is the ultimate giveaway that they're in fact a role player, because nobody else knows what a D10 is. Everyone else is like dice, just rolling dice. Because, I mean, you don't see it in, like, Vegas. All right, let's do some craps. I'm going to roll my 20 and my D12. And everyone will be like, you're shot in the face.
I just ordered some turquoise, opaque, blue dice. It was about half a dozen, just to give me something separate to roll.
I got to tell you, I'm at half-mast. Just hearing about that. I love dice. They love me. So, yes, D6s we use. We roll them and stuff happens.
Stuff happens. It's if you're familiar with role playing, it's not far off from that, because you have, if you want to attack somebody, you based off your stats that you have, you roll the dice, and that will determine kind of how successful you are.
I think in a lot of ways it's very similar miniatures wargaming aspect. I know that the most recent edition of D&D has taken a lot of lessons from it. I think that there is a certain similarity to the granularness of the rule set that D&D 4 has taken and used. I think there is certainly a really good comparison to that. I'm just saying.
It's, well, of course D&D started out as miniature wargaming.
It did.
Like, an initial, like, well, it spawned from that, and it was much more miniature-based. Mm-hmm. With scenarios, of course, but still very heavily miniature-based, which, through the different editions, yes, they've always kept that, but until last few, I'd say, like, second and third, it's... You can play without that exclusive board and miniatures and having everything represented.
True.
Where 4th edition is very heavily set on a gridded board where you need miniatures. It's really the only way you can play it. There is no other option outside of that.
If you have played games like Dungeons & Dragons 4th and done the combats, there's a lot of comparison that can be placed between Warhammer 40K and that game. I mean, one of the things you do is you measure. There isn't grids. There's, of course, an actual measuring tape that you use, and it's all in inches. Again, 12 inches or 6 inches or 18 inches, however much you move. And I think that, again, is designed mostly just to make it easier to move around and have really cool terrain and features and such. But the exacting nature of that measurement, the focus of, like, the rule set of this is what everyone follows. Everyone follows the same rule set. And in D&D 4, it's the same thing. The the Dungeon Master follows the same rule set as the players. They're bound by the same rules. The DM cannot say, well, this just hits. I think that sense of equality in D&D 4 really harkens back to the sense of equality in competitive wargaming, which is why it's sometimes a little you can find that D&D can get a little competitive. That certainly can happen, where competitiveness occurs. And I think that that is hearkening a lot to the Warhammer sort of mentality, where there is a very strong competitive vibe. But it's also designed to be a good sportsmanship competitive vibe. And I think that's one of the things that during the, while doing the rules are very much based in a sense of good sportsmanship and fairness and a little bit of give and take. Mm-hmm. Again, it's about letting someone get the shot off if it's iffy. Again, one of the rules they use is line of sight. If someone can take a look from the model's perspective and see your model, and there's some rules in place about how much the model has to be out if it's a bigger one and such. But if it's iffy, you're supposed to say, okay, you got it. I'll give it to you. But you're supposed to do the same. And I like the fact that it says, look, just don't be dicks to each other. Play the game. Play it honestly. If there's an iffy situation, if you really have to figure it out, roll the dice.
Exactly. Or sometimes say, oh, we're not quite sure, so instead of getting that full cover save, so ability to try and really take some of that damage, we'll give you a less save throw. So it's
easy. A compromise.
It's a compromise involved.
And you should be willing to take the compromise. And this is where I think that this game, because this game is played professionally. In some arenas, there are like competitive sort of situations.
There are tournaments. Have big-ass tournaments.
I wonder how that plays out. I have never seen a tournament. I've never been to one. But I would always be curious, how would you be able to shake that stuff out? Do they have people that you can...
There are judges, actually, who actually oversee games. And some tournaments, how they do it is, if you have to call a judge, you get people get hit with negative points because of it. Because
you can't resolve it. Overall point system of how... Yes. Oh, I see.
And so, but then he resolves the issue. So if you cannot resolve it on your own, you'll get negative points. But he will then make a call and say, this is what is going to happen.
Right. It does enforce the idea of hashing it out amongst yourselves. And I mean...
Not all of them do that, but yeah.
I think that there is a pretty large age range of people playing this game.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen like...
12 to 50 kind of idea.
In terms of building up that sense of sportsmanship, everybody can use some work on that.
Oh, yeah.
I know I can sometimes. I sometimes get a little bit discouraged when I'm defeated, because I'm learning. Like, I've only just started playing last year. I mean, literally around this time, I think, is when I picked up my first... No, maybe about a month or now. A month from now. April or something, I picked up my first piece.
Well, and even me, like, I've been taking advice from some people and went, okay, that's actually a really good idea. And then I try it out and go, that's, in fact, an excellent idea. And I go with that. And I try and use that.
And by playing with people, I think it really gives a sense of developing some really interesting skills, of being able to adjudicate, being able to compromise, being able to work with people. And again, the social aspect of this game is important because you're playing with another person. You're playing with another human being sitting across from you. And I think that's really important to keep in mind when you're playing any game, especially when you're playing competitive games, because, you know, tempers can raise a little bit. One of the things I want to ask is that we are at the fifth edition of this war game.
That's right.
What has happened over the years? You said you played for 7 years, so
I played third, fourth, and fifth. I barely played fourth, and I played a little bit. Well, that's not true. I did play a fair bit of fourth and third. Really, what's happened, it's become more dynamic, the rule set. And it's become more, I think, more interesting and more playable, is my belief. I know some people, like the other day, we went to a gaming shop, and they play a game called Flames of War, which is more like the 4th or 3rd edition of Warhammer 40K.
That's the World War II scenario stuff, right?
That's correct.
Was it that guy at Imagine?
Yes, at Imagine.
That was a tool.
Yeah, he...
I'm not sure if you're listening, but you're a tool. That guy, I don't know his name, but he was a tool. He was a tool.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm using that table. In 2 hours, he was. Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's my table, and I'm like, why isn't it commonplace... public game store if it's your table. I don't know. He bugged the hell out of me. Move on.
If I can use
my public forum to denigrate people I don't like, then I mean, what's the point, yeah. Right?
Oh yeah.
Let's move on. Let's keep going. I'm the petty one.
It's really encouraged. There's more allowances for all army types to be successful. Yes. Is what has really happened, I believe, because previous editions the way. The situations or scenarios setups was some army types had much... You could have a one-style army type who just massacre because you really have a hard time, unless you're a similar army type, hard time really affecting them. Like if I... There's different styles like shooting, one who has to assault, getting close. And if, for example, you had to assault, and some older types, that was really hard. unless you had some big guns supporting you, because the other person maybe just sort of all shooting. By the time you got there, there's nothing left of you because of the way it was set up. Now the way it's set up, the basic three mission, the scenario types, means that you can get to the other person quickly. Extra rules allow you to come off the sides of tables, means you can hammer in from the sides. And
I see.
The really change the tactics. Nobody can just, not one tactic will win. I know my friend Chris was mentioning there's four different, four things each army should have. Good mobility, good shooting, or like mid to like high strength shooting, because you need that. I can't remember the two are, but basically there's a mix
probably
of
four. some form of melee capability for doing the assaults.
Yeah,
I remember him mentioning that too. I don't remember the other two, but again, I like that there has been an allowances for every single army to be viable.
Yes.
Granted, there are certainly specializations in each race. Absolutely. There are, I mean, the Space Marines, I think, are probably the closest to the Joe Everyman team.
They are a Joe Everyman team, absolutely. Anybody can play them. You can basically have the worst tactics in the world with them, and you'll do okay.
Whereas something like the Eldar, which are the Space Elves, essentially, have a very strong ranged abilities, but they're very weak in terms of assault. At least that's what I've been reading.
Their skills are quite high in both shooting and in the light, even too, some of their units. It's just that they're more frail and not as strong as other units. Basically, what it breaks down to. Yeah,
but they're beautiful. I mean, that's one of the things that, I mean, I cannot go back. I don't want to go back to the models over and over again. But to be, to in full disclosure, I am about an 80-20, I think. 80% painting, 20% playing. And I think the reason for that, I like playing, but for me, the joy is seeing the models on the table and marveling at them painted and beautiful. And I look at them and I go, my goodness, look at those beautiful models. I'm playing the game and I'm more like going, look at that guy, look at his gun. It's kind of like, boy, I drilled a hole in the gun. So there's a barrel and I did some score marks. And
the other day, we played a game and I have to admit, I squealed a little bit seeing my army. All of it wasn't painted, but what I did have painted, I was very proud and very pleased the way it looked.
Really? I mean, I don't care if I win or lose. I'm like, look at the move! Look at this guy. It magnetized his arms so he can move his hands up and down. And little tips and tactics you can do to try and extend out the army. Like, I drilled in some magnets, and so the magnets will click together so the guy's arms can move, so I can pose him! And I can take off arms and put replacement arms. Because one of the things about Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy is the idea of what you see is what you get.
Yes.
So if your guy is armed with a giant flamethrower, he's flamethrower guy. Now this is where some hacks come in. You can talk to the other player and say, listen, this guy with the flamethrower, he's actually got a different weapon, a missile launcher. I want to make that clear to you. Is there any way we can make that very clear to you in the future? We can put like a little piece of paper on him or something or something, but I want to substitute this guy. And
it's often called proxy.
Yeah, the proxy pieces. I mean, I know that Colin, who is playing a really enormous army, like the army, some armies are very small and specialized and powerful, and some armies are
put together. Like, not dollar-wise, but points-wise, because your army's together based off points you have to spend.
And if a single unit is 20 points and you only have 750 to play with, well, that's going to give you less units than someone who has 4 points a unit.
Yes.
So Colin has a vast army of essentially foot soldiers he's got to put together for his Imperial Guard. So he has not got them all put together because he has to paint triple as many.
He's getting
units,
there though.
But yeah, I mean they're looking so incredible. But sometimes what he does, he says, okay, I'm going to proxy a few things out. These chess pieces are these guys. These paper cutouts are these other things. As long as you're in agreements of that, that's fine. The books say what you see is what you get, but gentlemen's agreements, as long as the two players are cool with it, I don't think it's an issue.
Yeah.
I think I like that what you see is what you get because then it doesn't cause confusion at the table.
Yes.
As long because if especially if you're going, well, this guy is actually this guy, and this guy's that guy, and this guy, and you're not going to remember any of that.
And here's something that often happens with games. Actually, you have to do this, or most almost all tournaments exclusively say this. You have to show the other person your roster sheet of your army, showing all the equipment.
And that's part of the etiquette of the game. It's part of the rules of the game.
So then you can say, oh, he has this. Oh, good to know. Like because what you see is what you get. Sometimes you might look at that, not 100% sure. Is that just a regular sword, or is that a power sword?
And that's one of the things you wanted to mention about special powers. Like, I mean, the dice are rolled back and forth. It's attack and defend, attack and defend. But some of the units have these abilities to do crazy stuff, to break the rules in interesting ways, to allow a reroll, to allow a changing of the value you have to get for the rules. And those special abilities are not visible on the creatures, especially since you can pick from a list. So having that list is great. One of the things I recommend to people who are getting into the game is pick up Army Builder. Or if you're getting a group of friends, get one guy to get to buy Army Builder and give him a bunch of money to have him buy it, and then everybody make your rosters off it. Because Army Builder is amazing and fantastic, and it has everything you need on a single sheet of paper, your entire army, including all the stats and everything you need.
If that doesn't work out, go into the forums, because often there's lots of links you'll find for different armies. We'll have different Excel spreadsheets with like options to create your army based off that.
And you can just write it yourself if you want. It's a lot of work, but I mean, sometimes people like doing that because they get a general idea of what their units are like. If they write it out, it's a form of homework. Like, you kind of learn what each number does.
And there's something else you hit on, was doing the homework for this game. I remember back in the day, I knew my army, but I didn't really know other people's armies, and sometimes I forget numbers. For the flow of the game, for the game to move well and quickly, knowing both your army list and the rules you'll be using for your army is really, really useful. It makes the game more enjoyable for both players, because you don't have to constantly look at the book to look up numbers or look up rules, and you can just play the game and enjoy it.
You're right. It's essential to be responsible for everything that you're putting on the table. You know what's also nice? Having an idea, or at least a really good working knowledge of what the other army does.
Absolutely.
Because then you know what the hell they're doing, and it also helps tactics. I mean, don't get me wrong, knowing that certain armies of certain types do certain things allows you to plan around them. But also it allows you to, if someone's like, oh, how does that thing work again? You can say, well, this is how it works, because I read this up, and this is how it happens. Now, he can either agree with you, and if he doesn't, I mean, don't take it personally, because, again, you're dealing with your recollection. And again, if there's a rule dispute, either come to an agreement or have him look it up in the book. And that's one of the things I really like about 40K, is that the rules are there, and it's actually a pretty decent index. Yes. I was noticing that the main rule book has a decent index, which is really something that a lot of role-playing games don't have. That's an enormous pain in the ass.
And I was going to say, to talk about the rule book, there is... there's something called Black Reach. It's a starter box with two armies in it. And one of the things you get with this is a small, compact rule book, which is significantly better than the standard book, which you actually buy, which is enormous. And you get your basic templates, all that stuff. So it's, if there's two of you interested in getting into it, buying this box is actually a good way to get started.
It's not that expensive either. I mean, I've seen it for $90. If you can find it, it can be a little bit less pricey. I've seen it as low as $75 in some places. The nice thing about that is it comes with, like, again, almost 50-60 units. So again, you're only paying a little under $2 a guy. And again, the when you really think about the price, don't look at the initial cost. Don't look, the sticker shock should be sort of modified by looking at how much you're getting. If it's $40 for 20 guys, you're paying $2 a guy. And that's not bad.
And especially because a lot of these miniatures, actually all the miniatures, they're detailed. They're very detailed. In fact, I think they're more detailed than any of the D&D ones you'd buy.
Well, they're miles higher than the D&D ones. They are similar in quality to, if everyone's familiar with Reaper miniatures, or the Magnificent Egos collection, or Warlord, or there's others. War Machine, which is another miniatures game. They're really fantastic. And one of the things that people get is like, oh, plastic. Why would I paint
plastic? I was just going to say that.
I'm like, really? I've painted on pewter for years. I painted on plastic for a little under a year. It's the same goddamn thing. The only difference is that the plastic is lighter, and if you drop it, it doesn't shatter to 100 fucking pieces.
7 years ago, I would have said plastic, meh. Some of the details was really crap. Now, they're fantastic. They're just amazing.
Yeah, they figured it out. I've been looking at some of the like older stuff that they've had, and I'm like, wow, these are terrible.
Terrible. I mean, I have some of those terrible plastic minis.
But, I mean, they've come a long way in the last couple of years. Technology has really advanced a long way. Yeah. I mean, you can get, basically, with the 3D printers that are coming out, I imagine they're able to get, like, minute detail. And I've seen it. I mean, some of the details I've seen on Black Reach. I mean, the Black Reach starter set minis are fantastic. They're great. They're beautiful detail. And that's not even the other individual sets. So, I mean, one of the things that what you want to keep in mind is that the cost, the Sticker Shock is only, consider how much painting time you're going to get. Like, assembly and painting and creation, and putting together of a set of even 5 units, again, it's hours of time. And if you don't like assembly and painting, I mean, assembly takes some time. Just do it. And just spray some primer. You're done.
I really? Also like assembly, to be honest. It's actually, I very much enjoy it. Yeah. Posing them, changing them. I often like doing little bits of custom things.
I was terrified of it until I got a couple of pointers on how to use glue without having to go over your hands and glue your hands together, which was happening a lot. I was getting glue on my hands, and it was bad. It was actually kind of good because I was cutting myself a lot with the
glue, and then I glue the
cut together, and it would sort of solve that problem, which was great. Very field dressing of me. But when gluing, applicators like toothpicks, like needles, actually are great. Needles are actually better than toothpicks because toothpicks actually absorb the super glue. Mm. So I use a sewing needle, then it actually works a lot better.
Now, I'm going to go back to a point I talked about earlier because there's something I missed. I really do want to talk about one of the things I want to talk about is the basic scenarios of
the dynamic missions,
because what's happened is some people shit on the new 5th edition the rules because they say, well, there's no really great missions right now. There's not really anything, like, it's not as interesting. It's got Flames of War, this World War II bunch. He's like, oh, there's all these scenarios in it.
That was the guy I called a douchebag, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, he's a douchebag.
I'm going to put it out like this. The DMG-1 didn't really explain scenarios per se, but DMG-2 for Dungeons & Dragons, the Dungeon Master's Guide, actually told you how to create these dynamic, interesting, more interesting scenarios and how to set a bunch of these up, where the first one didn't really do that as much.
The first one had a whole bunch of work to get all the essential rules together.
Exactly, and that's what the 5th edition is doing. They've set the core rules, and they're coming out with a bunch of scenarios and missions later on. I think it's come out maybe in a few months. I've seen talk of that. Someone mentioned it to me.
And if you look at issues of White Dwarf, they have some of those in there. I mean, the magazine White Dwarf that supports this has a bunch of mission ideas that you can do, and I've seen a couple of them in some of the more recent issues. They talk about here's a sample mission you can do. Here's an example of one, and these ideas are coming out. I mean, this is the same tired argument that comes out whenever a new edition of D&D comes out. Look at all the books that 3rd edition has. Well, yes, it's had 10 years of time to build up that library. I mean, give it a chance. Give it a couple of years. I mean, 5th edition has been out, what, 2 years? Warhammer 40K.
It came out about a year ago. Yeah, so it's only been 1 year.
So it's been 1 year. And people are complaining about there not being enough missions compared to 4th edition. Well, yeah. When does 4th edition come out?
3rd and 4th come out. Well, actually, 4th must have came out 5-6 years ago.
I know. It's a bullshit argument. Yeah. And it's not the purpose of the 5th ed book anyway. The 5th ed book had to go through a fuckload of rules.
Yes.
The scenario packs are coming. The scenario pack can also be designed. You can also talk about it. You can also go, okay, let's figure something out. Let's figure out let's build one. I mean, the idea is that those were ideas.
And the forums are filled with people suggesting scenarios and how to set them up. And there's lots of people interested in doing scenarios and creating them. And you can just go there, pull one off, play them.
The online resources for this game is unbelievable. I would like to talk, and this isn't on the list, but could we talk a little bit about online presence?
Sure.
I want to talk about something that I disagree about what Games Workshop is doing about the online presence. Have you heard about some of the stuff they've been doing?
The biggest thing
I have an issue with is that they are being really unpleasant to a lot of the fan communities. I think that it's one thing to protect your IP. It's another thing to alienate your fan base. If someone has drawn a picture of a space marine and put it up on their site, and you do a takedown notice because they've lovingly detailed a fan-made picture, and they're like, I'm sorry, but that's a likeness violation. You can't draw a space marine.
Oh, it's gone that far.
Yeah. They've demanded various things to be taken down because it violates their intellectual property. They've been forced to take down pictures of various, like, one of the things that one of the local, not local, but one of the Canadian gaming clubs, miniwargaming.com, has had to do is they've had to take down every single photo of Games Workshop product.
Specifically of photos that Games Workshop has property rights over that it is, in fact, theirs.
Yeah, but they're selling Games Workshop's products.
Yes.
They're a third-party retailer, which is covered underneath their third-party retailer, whatever. So they're still getting the money. They're just saying, you can't show any of our stuff. And I think that's ridiculous.
That is really odd.
Because, so what are they doing in response to this thing? I think this is great. They're saying, well, they can't stop people from putting up pictures of their painted minis.
Yes.
Because that belongs to you. So what they're doing is they're doing competitions. Brilliant. Competitions of, give us pictures of painted miniatures to get around this. Now, I think that for them to go aggressively after people who are posting PDFs of their rule books, going after people who are posting PDFs of their codexes, people who are trying to sell, like, custom sculpts without their permission, yes, go after them. Take them down, protect your copyright. But don't punish someone for drawing a space marine fighting orcs and say, I'm sorry, this violates our property because you're being artistic and loving our game. It's free publicity. Yeah. You don't piss on your fans. You don't. You figure something out. You make some sort of arrangement. And they've been a lot. I've noticed in the past, they're real dicks sometimes. And I think they really have their head stuffed up their ass when it comes to dealing with fans, when it comes to dealing with stores. They're really unfriendly to a lot of stores. I've talked to a couple of different gaming stores, Imagine and Pendragon. In Imagine, Pedro has said to me, he said, look, I have difficulty dealing with them because they demand I put in certain products. They say, you cannot have, we're not going to let you buy a game of Blood Bowl to sell. We want you to sell these products instead because market research shows they sell. And Pedro's like, okay, your market research is great, but it's my fucking store. Here's the money. Let me buy what I want from you. And they do this weird shit to a lot of third-party retailers.
They have a very specific system of how they set up with sellers and how, like, agreements that they do with them. They don't just give you a product to sell. They're not like most stores do that. They don't. I agree. It is really odd.
It makes no sense because it's their. Why the hell do they care what you're stocking? Why should they give a shit? It doesn't make any sense to me that they get to dictate what they can sell to you. They should just say, thank you for the money. Here's the stuff you ordered. Yes. And shut the fuck up. I mean, I just don't understand why they're like, no, you have to sell this stuff. And I'm like, really? Who the hell are you? You know, it just boggles my mind that they would do that. So that stuff annoys the shit out of me. But you can't deny that it's a fun game. You can't deny that it's a great hobby for the creation and crafting of beautiful objects of art, if you like that kind of thing.
And I was going to say, back to the online presences, these forums. Like, there's lots on building your army. Like, really great tacticas, like, written up for different armies, saying, this is how to build a good competitive army. This is, they rate all the units. They say, this is what's good, this is what's bad about each of them.
That discussion is so great. It's nice to have that community to plug into.
They say, like, there's painting guides and how to paint your armies.
The painting guides are fantastic. Some of them are videos you can see on YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and how to play your army, like, what strategies to use and how to use your units in gameplay.
Yeah, what tactics versus what armies, what tactics versus what army complements. It goes on and on. There's piles of internets available for you to look up.
I will mention Games Workshop site for some of that, specifically for some painting and building. Their tactics go to the forums. Honestly, the tactics on the Games Workshop is pretty generic, pretty bland, pretty uninspiring, and it's not really very good, really, in the end. But for the painting, they have some good stuff on there, but forums are excellent places to find it, too.
In addition, I should mention something about assembling. I had a experience recently where I had to assemble a miniature that was in 18 pieces, and that's one of the bigger units. I was putting together a dreadnought, an ironclad dreadnought, and it was a pain in the ass. The biggest reason it was a pain in the ass is because the only instruction guide I had to put this thing together was a single diagram on the back of the box about the size of a postage stamp. Boo! Give me more information. Give me at least, like, Lego comes with a big fucking manual. It's full color. Come on. Yeah. You know, and I mean, 18 pieces? I had to figure, I have a piece left over. I don't know what it's for. Is it loose? Is it just an optional piece? I don't know. I don't know what it's for. I just have it. And I'm like, here it is. I guess I'll use that for something else.
Some of the newer stuff, their guides for building stuff, is just, like, very, very detailed. Like, my basic orc boys, my orc trucks, there is, like, my orc truck has 6 or 7 pages. Yeah. And, like, each one shows you, they show you every single piece you could possibly put on the truck, and even in options, and they say, the last page says, big exclamation mark, to show you that you may want to put this on, you may not want to, because it changes the point cost, and says, these are all these options where you can put them on, and how to put them on.
Exactly. And I've actually should amend that there has been a couple of situations where I've opened it up and there's a nice big fat like manual of how to do stuff.
Yeah.
The vehicles I've encountered, the more recent stuff has that covered. And one of the things I found though that's really great, again, we go back to the online community, if you want a mini assembled of any kind, there's probably a video or at least a couple of forum posts about how to put it together. And that's great. There's some of the, like again, Mini Wargaming has a lot of great stuff on their YouTube channel of how to assemble various stuff. It actually has how to assemble every single newest army that's come out, the Tyranids, the crazy alien, eat-everything guys, the locusts of space. They're every single mini that has come out, they have an instructional video on how to put that mini together. And that's a couple fantastic of options on how to put it together. And the quality is high level. The it's great. It is really great. And I'm highly recommend Googling, YouTubing, whatevering. Find that information and use it. Because, I mean, it's great. It's great to have.
I agree completely. And one of the things is when you learn how to put together a mini, most armies, your basic troops, you're putting together 20, 30, 40 of them. And so you're going to need to know how to, it's useful seeing that once, and you can repeat the process again. And here's something I want to time from that. Warhammer isn't necessarily about, there are some individual models you can do. Like there's individual special units. But there's a large portion of your army you're going to be doing repeat building and painting.
Yes.
And this is different than, say, like Dungeons and Dragons, 4th Ed. But again, it falls back to the wargaming that people have done for years and years and years. And you build this army and there's like 30 guys in a unit and they're all the same. And at the same time, there's small variances, small differences from each guy to guy. And I know my orcs, for example, have that. There's small little differences. Yeah,
and absolutely right. I think one of the nice things that Warhammer does is all these optional little bits and pieces. They're called bits. And the bits are plastic or metal pieces, depending on whether you're getting a plastic or metal figure, that you can add on to a figure if you want. But you don't have to. And that's something great because you can make every single one of those 30 guys slightly different in some way. Their paint schemes are probably going to be very similar. You want to keep them similar because if you're building a group of 30 guys, unless you want them to look ragtag, which some of the armies are, for example, the orc army that you're fielding should have an element of a little bit of rag and tag, but there should be at least one color that stands out, mostly just for visualization so you can say, okay, those are my guys. But also just because, again, the cohesion looks really nice when you have them all together. It's like a painting. You know, you got to have all the pieces come together.
And armies are based off paint schemes. You choose a paint scheme, you paint your army, you tend to paint it that way.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, for painting, say you're painting 30 guys. That first guy and the last guy, you're going to be noticing a difference. Your painting skill is going to improve as you're going along. And you're going to find different tricks and tips as painting through. It's something you do not get in Dungeons & Dragons often, unless you're painting like 30 zombies.
Exactly. And one of the things that I want to pull off that, too, is that you said painting is a skill. And I agree with that. Painting is a skill. There are not people born. This is like the bullshit argument about people saying, well, a D&D is born. A dungeon master is made, not is born, not made. It's bullshit. It's skill. It takes time. You have to practice. Just like being a dungeon master, painting, your first game that you're going to run, it looks nothing like the latest game you're going to run. You just have to practice, and you will get the tips and tricks necessary over time, over error. And one of the methods that I recommend that we've been doing is painting with other people.
Oh, yeah.
Cannot stress how fun, first of all, it is to hang out with a bunch of friends, to put on some music, to hang out, to shoot the shit while you're sitting together. You're saying, hey, man, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? How can I fix this? How can I fix that? That's a good job, man. You're really not on it today, are you? Yeah, what the fuck am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing. My guy looks like a Barbie action figure.
Some days, it's definitely, I feel like a two-year-old painting outside the lines,
like,
you know?
I like ice cream. And if you have a bunch of guys coming together to paint, it's great. It's great because the amount of involvement is low. Like, people can kind of do other things while they're painting.
The requirements of each individual is very low.
Exactly. You don't have to be there and do something. Like, with role-playing games, when you're there, you are expected to participate.
Expected
and
should be.
And you have to have a certain mentality of, I'm in there, I'm getting stuff done, I'm doing things. With a paints party, you're kind of hanging out. It's very chill. It's very relaxed. People can, if it's at a person's house, you can toss on the TV, put a movie on. I remember once when we were painting, I threw on a bunch of, like, really terrible, terrible sci-fi movies.
Equilibrium?
Equilibrium, and it was Starship Troopers, and then Starship Troopers 3. Starship Troopers 3 is terrible, by the way. Oh, my God. But it had the bugs, and it had this guys in the Space Marine stuff, so I thought it was relevant. And it's a fun time. I highly recommend it. If you have friends, if you want to do this sort of thing, if you want to get together and paint, whether you do it with one, with two people, or with 10, it's a hell of a good time. And you get tips and tricks and ideas and thoughts and posing ideas and situations and stuff. And people could be working on miniatures. Some people could be just assembling. Some people could even be playing if they want to, on a different table or something. Or even some people could be working on landscape. The idea is it's a big social gathering where there is something occurring, but you can kind of pick and choose how much of that you do.
And I like social gatherings like that because it's not exclusive either to other friends. Because when you're playing, yes, it kind of is. You're playing with some guys. But with that, some of my friends just like to maybe just, they're setting up for the next D&D game, or they're doing some writing. They can join us.
They just hang out. Yeah, if they want to. If they want to, someone wants to sit there and write, or sit there and surf the net, or sit there and just kind of shoot the shit. You can paint and talk at the same time.
Yes.
It is not, for a couple of moments, you may be like, you know, tongue flipped open, you're kind of, going to get that little piece in. But then, like, when you're doing little bits and pieces here and there, like general, when you've got 20 armies and you're going to do 5, and the way I do it is I paint everybody's back. I pick 5. I do it in groups of 5.
You do batch painting.
I do batches. I do 5 guys back, 5 guys front, 5 guys side, 5 guys legs. And I find that if I do it in batches, they get done a lot faster, and I can keep some consistency. In addition, yes. I can also say, well, these 5 guys work together as a unit, and these 5 guys work together as a unit, so I can make them a little different.
Yeah.
Kind of fun with that. But yeah, group. The social aspect of this cannot be undersold, and like I said, it provides a nice common theme for a party, a paint party, for example.
And mentioning before, we're talking about knowing your rules, knowing your codex, understanding the person's army, understanding your army. If that's all covered, when you're playing the game, you can shoot the shit then too. And that's what's been happening. Jeff and I played a game a week or two ago, and it just happened that, you know, we both understood each other's armies fairly well. And we would look up stuff once in a while, but mostly we kind of play tactics. I would give him some suggestions and say, oh yeah, that's a fantastic move, that'll really hurt me lots. And we just shoot the shit and talk with that as well. We'd have a bit of a conversation with this or that, because we didn't have to just be focusing on every little detail because we didn't know what was going on.
Exactly. And I mean, one of the things that I do too, which I think is a lot of fun, is creating a narrative while you're rolling dice and firing back and forth and like doing these things. You describe, you know, how the gunfire is blazing and the laser guns are firing and the smell and the acrid smoke of death and despair, and it's a chance to get your lit 101 dictionary out and say 5 different things of grim dark and grim bad and all that sort of stuff. It's fun to look at what's happening and build a narrative around it. And some of the after action reports that I've read that people like Colin have built, that things like you've done a couple that are great to read afterwards, because you know what happened in the game, but the interpretation of that afterwards, taking the wargaming aspect and then building into a story.
A creative and cohesive story.
I think it's great. I think it's a wonderful use of flexing those creative muscles, and it sort of scratches a different edge, which is nice. So I really like that.
I do, and yeah, my ass is getting sore, to be honest, in this chair.
There was one more thing we were going to talk about whether or not 4th Ed can replace the Warhammer 40K experience.
No, I'm done.
No, it can't.
No, it can't.
There you go. There's no more discussion on this aspect. We've already talked about it, to be honest. Warhammer 40K and Dungeons & Dragons, 4th edition does certain things really well. I think it creates a very narrative combat. I think that the goals of Dungeons & Dragons 4 are different from the goals of Warhammer 40K.
And the other thing is, with 40K, it's a competition. You're competitively playing between two people versus D&D 4th Ed, which is a group of people versus the GM.
And the GM is not actually trying to defeat the players.
Yes, that's a big...
The GM is trying to make it... is trying to play a compelling villain and yes. have a good time. And if the goal is to defeat the characters, the game works okay, but there's problems. Because, again, the GM is the one that constructs the encounters. Whereas in one of the rules we didn't talk about is that when you construct two armies, you construct them in isolation, and then you present them at game. At the game time start, you hand each other a piece of paper saying, this is what's being fielded. You don't know what the other person is fielding. You can make some educated guesses based on the paint parties. You go,
oh,
okay.
Another tank, huh?
We'll have to think about that. But, I mean, if you start amassing a larger and larger army, I mean, in terms of point totals, if you amass a larger army than you have point total to field, then people are like, what's he going to field? What's he going to do? I don't know what he's going to do. Maybe he's going to do this. Maybe he's going to do that. But you don't know. Whereas in the case of Dungeons & Dragons, that's not the case. The Dungeon Master has to tailor the encounters to the players, or the game isn't as much fun. So it's a very different set of motivations. It's very different. I think it's a very different feel. It's a very different set of rewards. And I don't think the two really compare in that sort of regard. There are some similarities in terms of the tabletop aspect. But again, and there are some tactical feelings that share. But to be honest, if you want a pure tactical experience, Warhammer's the way to go.
Yeah. All right.
If you need help with your master plan, check out RPGpodcast.com.
So I can see those people skating on the river down there, and...
So dangerous.
It's dangerous?
Well, it's been awfully warm and odd in the last couple of days.
I went skating down there yesterday.
Really?
It was fine. Yeah, it was really fine.
You know, I've been...
There's trucks driving
Laura
on there.
Laura has been trying to get me to skate. I found my skates finally.
Oh, hey, well, hey.
So I've got to get down there and do some skating. Though she's as terrified as skating above moving water. Like, if you're skating on a river, it's kind of terrifying.
Oh, yeah, I've seen rivers, lakes.
I mean, they run a bloody Zamboni down that thing, so I don't think that's a really big deal.
A 2-ton truck drives down, like, will drive on it. I've seen it. Like, yeah, so at the forks of the intersection, that car is parked in the middle of an intersection of two rivers meeting.
Yeah, and I think that, if they're okay, then I'm probably okay.
You'll be okay.
To be honest, it'd be fine. I just don't know how to stop. Maybe she can teach me how to do that.
Friend Mike also loves skating. He wants to go up more, so we can do
maybe
a little
bit
together.
Maybe we can have a skate night. Maybe I could talk to Laura and see if she wants to do it. She wants to get back. She wants to do something. So I've been thinking about that.
Like a Thursday. Thursday night.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
But
it's been great. This special episode was just a chance to get our pipes cleaned in a non-sexual sense and to sort of talk about hobby we love. And that is sort of beyond the pale, beyond the subject matter of what we're doing since we put in the special episode. I think our next special episode should be something about something else we do that is far beyond the pale. What else do we do? What do you do?
That's a good question.
We could interview your wife about knitting.
We could do a special episode. We would learn a lot, to be honest.
A lot of knitting. Like, we could not, I mean, there is an entire knitting community out there. Did you know that?
Ravelry.
I bet you don't. Ravelry. My God. I've been educated about this stuff, and I think it'd be great to bring her on and have her talk
about it. That'd be pretty fun, John.
And some of the concepts of knitting and comparisons.
We have to do some research beforehand.
We have to do some knitting-based research.
But luckily I live with her, and it's easy for me to do research.
Exactly. I could sort of bring in some cross-stitch stuff that I've observed. Maybe some of that rug, the hook knitting that I've seen.
Crocheting. I know some things.
That's right. That's right. So that'll be special episode 2. In the meantime, when we come back in a couple of weeks, it'll be a discussion on social expectations. We're going to be building up towards that, talking about it. And after that, I'm really hoping we can get into couples and gaming. I am going to start pulling the website forums that we have at Spooky Outhouse to ask, to get some more questions asked. I'm really looking to see what we can talk about. I have some questions initially, ones I want to talk to the couples we're going to be interviewing, but I want to get some more, and I think that'll be a lot of fun to get people to ask me some stuff along the, like, you know, you guys role play in the bedroom. I think I'm going to leave that out, but if you have other things to ask, I'd be really interested in seeing
you here. And our forums are up at Spooky Outhouse Productions.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what you think. I think, as with Kyle, the less so. He's more like, fuck you, man.
Right? I actually said to everybody I meet, the first time I meet them, say, fuck you, man. First words out of my mouth, they don't have to say anything. They don't even say their name.
That's what I say. Like, that's just Kyle. That's how he greets people.
After that, I shake their hand and introduce myself.
And you're all smiling afterwards. It's like, what? What just happened? Did that just happen? Did I dream that?
People are kind of schizophrenic around me after that. They're not quite sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, they don't know when you'll snap and harvest their organs.
Which has happened. I
need a whole freezer for this.
I titled it Dark Harvest.
Venison my ass.
I was a green alien at the time, and...
Wow. And on that note, you can hack it.
Put your pants off. Girl, you got legs like shotguns. Music from You Can Hack It is by Buck65. You can get it free from his website.